Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time for Race Chat Live with Chris Creighton and Craig Moore.
All right, race fans. It's another edition of Race Chat Live. Fellas, how the hell are you? Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. So you couldn't hear me a second ago?
No, not with that music so loud.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll try to get that... Well, we're just getting turned up on this Wednesday. What are you talking about? You sound like a man crawling in here.
Got to get in bed early tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, when you got to go to work at 5 a.m., it makes it kind of rough.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's awful being an adult. It really is.
I didn't know the shit was going to be this much not fun.
I'm telling you. I swear, if I do anything for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich fixed by Mom, and catch the school bus at 7:30. So. All right. It is Race Chat Live. It's a Wednesday night. Boy, oh, boy, we had a couple of setbacks, but we are here, and we're glad to have a show this evening. Of course, make sure that you share it around. It's been shared in the link as well. Let me see if I can get this. You know, we were at Talladega. Man, it was a great race. Saturday for sure. Sunday, not so much. They brought the cars out and then called it for the rest of the evening. They resumed the race on Monday. And, Bubba Wallace steals the victory. Third first-time winner of the weekend. I guess, guys, we'll start from there.
Well, say what you want about Bubba Wallace, but it was nice to see three first-time winners. He had himself in the right place at the right time to get the W. It doesn't matter what the record book show, what we think. There won't be an asterisk that says rain shortened. It won't say that at all.
Right.
So, you say what you will, but he is a NASCAR winger. Crying his eyes out like a two-year-old, which is understandable. I think it's a good thing.
Dad?
So, yeah,
three first-time winners, with two of them being guys that you would never expect to really get a win, is pretty shocking. I mean, Tate Fogelman, didn't know anything about him. Now we do. Brandon Brown,
right.
We kind of knew who Brandon Brown was. He was starting to come out more and more as some of these top Xfinity guys were moving up, and we're starting to get to know some of these smaller teams better. And Brandon Brown just happened to, you know, play the card to Talladega right, be at the right place, right time.
Well, and this was the guy that had the video the other couple of months ago, right, where he was trying to sell sponsorship. He did the whole for sale It was basically a sales pitch video. It's awesome, man. I mean, to see three first-time winners, I've always been a fan of first-time winners. It's also 16 different winners this year in the Cup Series. We thought that at the beginning of the year, Chaz Taylor, remember us talking about how we could see a path to 16, and we found it this year.
Yeah, we found it, but we thought it would happen before the playoffs, though.
Oh, well, no doubt. We did expect it. We thought it could happen before the playoffs. But I don't know in recent memory where we've had 16 different winners all season long. It's definitely and the season's not over. Next weekend this coming weekend for the Roval is the only other wild card race that we could possibly have. Be interesting to see if A.J. Allmendinger is in that list, because he could definitely be the 17th different winner this year if he is scheduled to race in this weekend's event at the Roval.
Yeah, Charlotte will play wild card, but at the same time, I don't think so. I think we're going to see our road course ringers here for this one, regardless of if it's Xfinity or Cups. It's only those two series this weekend. Trucks are off to Martinsville.
Right. And we'll get into what's happening this weekend at the Roval a little bit later on in the program. Of course, a lot to talk about with what we had. It was very upsetting on Sunday when they brought the cars out after an hour and a half rain delay. They brought the cars out. The cars made one lap around the speedway. Obviously, a light shower had come in, but it was kind of a misty rain. Of course, what we've seen from the in-car camera views that they plastered all over the racetrack, it was raining there on somewhere around turn number two. But the mist was coming actually out of turn number four and was kind of just, floating across the racetrack there. Unfortunately, they made the call to end the race, and by the time they called the race, Taz, Craigmore, the sun was shining. So we were basically walking with 100,000 people back to our cars with people saying, where's the rain at? Where's the ponchos? Did NASCAR call this way too early, considering it was only 2:30 and it doesn't get dark until 6:30, being that the whole track was not lost. And I was there. I know the whole track wasn't lost. It was obviously some rain falling, or else we wouldn't have seen it on the front windshield. But did NASCAR make that call just a little too early? Taz.
Well,
Craig. Go ahead, Craig. No, Craig, you spoke up. Go ahead.
All right. Do I think they made it a little too early? Well, they said it was an hour and a half after the equipment got to the track. If they were anticipating that rain was going to last until about 3:30, it would then take them an hour and a half to 2 hours to get that track dry. That would be 5:30. From what I understand from the Fox or from the FS or NBC broadcast. So that would bring it up to 5:30 for race time. If the sun sets at 6:30 your time, 7:30 our time, that's only an hour of racing. How much are they going to get in? They would have had to move it then until Monday. So do I think they called it too early? No, I think they called it just about at the right time based on what their people, their experts were saying about the storms coming through.
Unfortunately, not being at the racetrack would definitely set that opinion for you. If you had been at the racetrack, I believe you would have a different outcome, but I still want to hear what Taz has to say about it.
Honestly, at first I thought they called it too early, but being that if you really think about it, they probably called it at the right time. I mean, it's unfortunate that circumstances happened the way they did, but in a sense, I think they played the smart card instead of playing the card of, well, let's see how much we can get in before we can call it a race.
Right.
And I think that at that point, it could be a dangerous situation, especially the Super Speedway.
There's no way that NASCAR could have known that it, the bright skies would have come out. The sun basically never – the sun come back right back out as soon as they made the call to end the race. It looked as if things were going to go sour, unfortunately, for the 100,000 race fans that were there. We knew otherwise, and it was very unfortunate that that many people had to walk back to their cars. There was a it was quite a cadence being called this this weekend. I'm not sure if you guys heard about it on the from the Xfinity race, but there was a chant, a certain chant that was something to the noise of "Oh Biden, fuck Oh Biden," or something to. So
you mean let's go, Brandon.
Yeah. Let's go, Brandon. Yeah. I thought that was awesome. So, Bubba Wallace winner, he was not only the first-time winner, but also longtime crew chief Booty Baker. Booty Baker picked up his very first cup win. That was a surprise to me, knowing how long Booty Baker had been around the sport. Also, McDonald's, first time since 1994, the McCurse. It's finally broken. But let's go back to Booty Baker. Booty's been in the garage a long time. It's almost as if, you know, this was meant to be. He was just put into the crew chief box after Mike Wheeler took a more important role within 2311's race team. How significant of a win is this for Booty Baker, and could he be the long-term basic crew chief for Bubba Wallace?
I think he can be. I think that him and Bubba are gelling. And, I mean, one win is a little too soon to call it. But, you know, they're having improvement. And nobody's going to pull miracles overnight. I don't care. I don't care who the hell you are. You could be Chad Knaus, for Christ's sake. And, you know, you're not going to have a miracle. You're not going to have a miracle. Now, I think that what would help him, and that's cute, Tess. I think what would help him is getting Bubba another win this season. I definitely think that would solidify him as the crew chief going forward instead of the interim crew chief. But we'll have to wait and see. Michael Jordan also did put a... I think that he figured out that NASCAR is a lot harder of a sport than what he anticipated, because he had said Bubba would have several wins by now. And Bubba just had one.
I mean, at what point do you try to build up your guys? That's the old, I have full confidence in my coach's capabilities or my player's capabilities. You know, that's just the old hoorah. As you try to build up confidence within the organization. It is a first-time win for Michael Jordan. As a matter of fact, Tav and Craig Moore, I got to hear on all the major sports networks them mention that Michael Jordan's race team won a cup race. And that was typically on stations and on news networks that don't cover much NASCAR. So obviously a popularity boost, along with the headlines. Bubba Wallace was the first African-American winner since. And I thought that was probably a misconception, considering he's not the first. Wendell Wallace was. I was, you know, it's the way that you word things at times. We didn't want to diminish the fact that
Wendell Scott
was the very first African-American winner in NASCAR's Cup series. So
guess what, Chris? Let me ask you a serious question.
Yeah.
Does it really fucking matter he was black?
No, I didn't think so at all.
Exactly. And that, I think, one of the things
that irritates me most about this coverage of this, of him winning, who gives a shit that he was black? Who cares?
It was so,
Bubba Wallace.
He won in his home track, basically, and that wasn't the story. Like, this guy grew up in Alabama, L.A., local Alabama. When you say, I'm from L.A., people say, oh, you're from Los Angeles. You laugh and say, no, I'm from lower Alabama. This guy was from lower Alabama, and obviously had probably dreamed of winning at a, you know, at a home track if he was, you know, a big fan like we were growing up. Tallahassee would have to be the place that he'd want to score his first victory, and yet it was overshadowed by the continuation of basically that this was a black driver. I'm so glad Formula One is so over that fact that Lewis Hamilton has 100 career victories in Formula One, and not one time did they ever have to mention that he was of African European descent, I guess you would say, because he's not American. So I'm not sure how you would properly go about that one, and let's not get ourselves in any trouble trying to speculate how to.
I don't think you can with Formula One, being that you have multiple races and personalities and foreign backgrounds. So there's really no way you can cut it with that other than just being as neutral as possible.
Right.
I mean, it just amazes me, that, you know, why couldn't we just say Bubba Wallace, first win in 142 starts at NASCAR's top level. You can see that he's I don't even know if he's 100% American, African American.
Well, he has
but
a white
still,
father,
what the hell,
if that even matters.
Right. So what the hell does it matter? And that's, and not you, I'm just saying in general, every sports outlet, every news outlet saying the same thing. And it's like, and we wonder why in this country we have race issues.
Right. The only race issues that I have happen at the racetrack. So I believe that's where,
exactly.
And we've tried to make that perfectly clear here so many times before. We are celebrating the fact that Michael Jordan, the biggest icon, when you say Michael Jordan, you say Mike Tyson. When you say Michael Jordan, you say Leonardo DiCaprio, right? You're talking about one of the biggest icons in the world, Michael Jordan. One of the biggest icons in the world just won his very first cup race. I mean, you don't have to put that Michael Jordan is African-American. We know who the hell Michael Jordan is.
Exactly.
And he's a great guy, and I'm glad that he's in our sport, and we're going to celebrate the fact that McDonald's, Booty Baker, Bubba Wallace, and Michael Jordan, and Denny Hamlin, they're all in this together for the first time. And I love it. It's absolutely it's an amazing time for NASCAR as we move on to the next generation car. Speaking of the next generation car, we'll move on, we'll segue into our next subject. This car is obviously really close to full production, but Toyota has made a statement that teams are behind on the next deployment. We're kind of running out of time here, guys. Do we see a setback coming, or are we all in agreement that they'll have this car out and in time for the start of the 2022 race season? We'll start with Craig.
No, I think we're going to see it at the third race of the season. I think that they're too far behind the eight ball to get it all out for Daytona. So I think you're going to see it the second or third week of the season. They're going to be running this package. They're going to be running these cars for the first or second race of the 2022 season. And you won't really see the impact of this car until 2023 at the earliest.
So you believe that this is going to similar rollout to what we've seen with the car tomorrow, basically where we start the first four to five races of the season. Then at Bristol, they debuted the car. This is, and if I'm not mistaken, Kyle Busch was the first winner ever in the car tomorrow.
Right, he said he hated the friggin' thing.
Right, he's driving like a piece of shit. Oh, Kyle Busch has been making us, giving us content for well over 15 years. So Taz, I'm kind of in agreement with Craig over here. I feel like that we're not going to debut this car in time. What's the point in hauling a brand new car to this little bitty place out in Los Angeles? And then we have so many cars at our disposal. Let's bring the car that we just seen this weekend at Talladega. Let's bring that back to Daytona and just try to get this car, this next generation car, eased into next season. What's your thoughts on that, Taz Taylor?
Well, I think Toyota's only behind because you have to think of it this way. Ford and Chevy has been in NASCAR for how long now? And there's many race teams with Chevy and Ford. Toyota doesn't really have much of anything. I mean, you have Joe Gibbs, 2311, and Scott Brothers. There's your Toyota team. So for them being behind the eight ball, I'm not surprised. But in a sense, they shouldn't be behind the eight ball. Why? Because they only have, like, six cars to worry about. Versus Chevy and Toyota, they're talking at least 10. So why is Chevy and Ford have at least 10 cars to prepare? They're on point. Toyota has like six, and they're like behind the eight ball.
Could be a stalling mechanism. Taz Taylor, very interesting that you picked up on that, right? Very interesting. Let's make sure, guys, that we're sharing the show to our outlets there, being that it is a Wednesday night. We want to make sure we grab the attention of people because they don't know that our show. I've had a couple of, other than our normal listeners, of course, I've had a couple of people reach out and try to get that link there that we've got. So let's make sure we get that shared around. I believe it's going to be the one from 23 minutes ago. I didn't have any trouble with the first link. Was there trouble with the link, Craig? With the first one?
I know one you shared this morning, it gave me an error message, but whoever posted the second time, it worked.
Okay, awesome. So let's make sure that we unpin that one. I can't, from an Android phone, I can't unpin that. If somebody can unpin the first one. Anyway, we'll get back to our subjects there. Big news rattled out today in the Xfinity series. You know, when Josh Berry won a couple weeks ago in the Michael Annette machine, we all kind of made a comment that, you know, how would this go with Michael Annette? Being that he hasn't had but one victory in that race car in his entire stint at Junior Motorsports. Josh Berry stepped in and relief to take on a victory. News today, Michael Annette announced that he will retire at the conclusion of the 2021 season. That's a big surprise. I don't think it is.
No, I don't.
I agree. I don't think it was. I think the writing was on the wall. I think that, you know, when Josh Berry comes in and wins one and then wins another one, yeah, his days were numbered. He may have been told, hey, look, you better step it up or you're done. And the pressure was too much, so he just said, you know what, let me just hang up my helmet and take off my heat shields. And all the local dirt.
But wasn't Michael Annette facing some, like, health personal issues, too?
Yes, he has a broken femur that I believe there's been some complications with the healing of that injury. It may have played a big part into this, but I think that maybe, and I'm not speculating, and I sure hate to make this to sound as bad as it does, but you know, when you put two and two together, Junior Motorsports already had four cars that they signed for next year. We wondered if there was going to be a fifth full-time Junior Motorsports car. I think this decision came out well before basically the situation. What's going to be interesting is whether or not, you know, Michael Annette was connected to the owners of Pilot and Flying J, of course. Those same owners are the owners that own the Cleveland Browns, if you guys didn't know that little FYI there. So there is a connection between the Cleveland Browns and Michael Annette as well. So he is a family heir to the Pilot and Flying J truck stops. And so it's going to be interesting to see if, similar to Menards, they stick around in the sport. So we'll be interested. I just see that. Also in truck news this week, Grant Enfinger will take over the number 23 GMS car that has been driven by Chase Purdy, Meridian, Mississippi, local native driver. Obviously, will be out of a ride at the end of the season, but Grant Enfinger will be able to compete for a full-time Truck Series championship next year. That's big news for the old Enfinger.
Definitely,
yeah.
For sure. He got screwed this year with ThorSport, being that he had to share a ride with Christian Eckes, which I'm not taking anything from Eckes, because Eckes is talented for a young age, he is. And as long as cards play into his hand, he can have a great career. But he also screwing out a good driver, veteran driver, that is, in Grant Enfinger, who's still trying to, I think, really peak in his career, especially if he wants to be a Truck Series regular. So I think him moving to GMS, securing his own full-time ride without having to share anything, and try to figure out when he's not in a truck he's used to being in, he has to go find another team or somewhere else to race. So Enfinger moving to GMS, very smart, and especially with how competitive GMS is usually week in, week out. Although I'm still curious as to seeing how many trucks they're going to field next year, being that they'll have a cup team too.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. Of course, they had a full-time Xfinity team last year, but I believe they focused mainly in the Truck Series this season. News come out yesterday that it's kind of fitting as well. This is what's interesting about Wednesday show. We're actually getting news after the race that we're able to report on this show, which is something that we don't normally have the luxury of doing with our show on Monday night these days. We may have to check into this because I have a lot more content that I can work with on a Wednesday than I normally do on a Monday night. 2311 secures charter and crew chief for the 2022 season. Of course, this is the charter and crew chief for Kurt Busch. Speculation is that it's going to be Matt McCall. I don't believe that that's going to fit the descriptive, considering that they say this crew chief is currently employed somewhere. Being that Chip Ganassi is shutting down at the end of the season, I don't think that that would be a breach of contract. But they did have a certain somebody that left that announced that they were leaving Penske. I believe Todd Gordon. Could Todd Gordon be possibly a replacement here, or an addition to the 2311 race team, or will it be somebody outside of that box? Start with you, Chaz.
He could. Not sure. I guess we'll have to see how that goes. I don't know. I'm up in the air, honestly. I thought Todd Gordon was a great fit in Penske, but he's the guy going over to 2311. I guess we'll see how he does.
I believe Todd Gordon's going to be the director of competition at Roush Fenway Racing with Brad Keselowski. That's where I'm guessing Todd Gordon goes, and I believe that TJ Majors is going there as well, as Brad Keselowski cherry-picked from the organization that he's raced at for the last 12 seasons. But it's very interesting that the way that it was worded, that they're not allowed to basically say who the crew chief is because they're currently employed, that's really leaving it up in the air. It's going to be really hard to say that, look, this is who we definitely know will be the crew chief over there. Also, it's not been announced who they got their charter from, though it's believed that this is a Star.com charter that Hamlin has gotten his hands on, which still leaves it up in the air over Front Row Motorsports and whether or not they are going to continue racing next season with the two charters that they have. Any big guess there on who the crew chief would be, Craig Moore, or where the charter come from?
See if I can find it quick. I thought I saw it.
It is on our page. Yeah, so
I believe I may have found it.
Silly season, of course, is in full effect. It is anybody's guess right now who will wind up where. I did see this weekend, as we move on to previewing the Roval, Stuart Haas Racing will have a driver driving the 52 machine this weekend, which is a Rick Ware Racing machine. Joey Hand is the name of the driver. He is a Ford project driver. I have not personally heard of Joey Hand. I'm not sure if anybody here has. Have you guys heard this?
What was that again? I was trying
Long-time
to find
sports
the
car
starter.
Veteran Joey Hand will make his NASCAR Cup Series debut for Rick Ware Racing this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway Roval. The 42-year-old Hand has earned wins in some of racing's biggest events, including the 24-hour Le Mans. He has also been victorious in the Rolex 24 at Daytona 2011, in the overall 2017 GT Le Mans class, and the 12 hours of Sebring in the 2011-2012 GT class. I'm a sports car fan myself, but I do not recognize the name Joey Hand, but he has basically been recruited by Stuart Haas and Ford as a development driver and will take the wheels of the 52 this weekend at the Charlotte Roval. Of course, you can find that information on jski.com. Any thoughts on that guy, Joey Hand? He seems to have his ducks in a row. He's got quite a few wins under his belt.
Craig, anything?
Kelly? Did you guys?
Well, I've never heard of the guy, but I don't see him being a threat, being it's a Rick Ware racing car, to be very honest. And they're usually the bottom of the food chain, the weight that you can't get off your shoulders.
All right.
Key that's holding on to the wrench.
They are literally the butt of everybody's joke every weekend. But I want to tell you, that 52 car that Josh Malicki drove the past weekend at Talladega with Trans Am, with the Eagle from the Smokey and the Bandit, that was one of the coolest throwbacks I've ever seen on a race car. He nailed it. That was awesome. Even though it was on a Ford and not on a Firebird, it was really cool to see that paint scheme. Once again, whoever the guy is that designs those paint schemes at Rick Ware Racing, they are wasting opportunities one of these bigger guys, one of these bigger teams definitely need to get him in the door. Because I've seen some pretty ugly race cars here of late through the Hendrick camp and some of the others. So they need to step up their rap games.
They need to do something because they have an IndyCar, it's either IndyCar or Formula One team that does pretty decent. They have a Pinty Series car that runs pretty good. What can't they figure out in the Cup Series?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think that it is Rick Ware's motive to be competitive in NASCAR Cup Series, and it's basically a way to make money. And when that initial time comes to be competitive or be forced out of the sport, I believe that once they make the move to force them to do one way or the other, then Rick Ware will put together a solid race team. But right now, I think he's really just building up funds to become a solid race team. It's something that we've seen in years past. I mean, it's only so much money he can make every year by building these race cars. But unfortunately, it just, you know, I heard Larry Mack or one of the SiriusXM shows say it best, at least get guys in like J.J. Yeady that know how to drive an underfunded race car. You know, it was from Door Bumper Clear. Brett Griffin, I believe, said, you know, when J.J. Yeady drives for him, he's really good about staying out of the way and stuff. Some of these guys race for Rick Ware, just put their car in the middle of the racetrack and say, get around me when you can. So in other news this week, the sudden passing of John West Townley. It was a double murder, homicide. I don't really know how to explain this one. Basically, Athens Police Department has released a statement claiming that opened fire on John West Townley, who come into the residence of his ex-wife, Miss Townsley, with a hatchet. Gun was pulled by Mr. Anderson. He fired off several shots, which accidentally struck the former spouse of John West Townley, killing her and John West Townley. Tragic news. If you don't remember John West Townley, I guess probably what he's most known for is the chicken fight between him and, I believe, who was that? Spencer Gallagher, I believe, as they fought each other at a racetrack there in the Truck Series. I'm trying to think of what racetrack that was. I know it had pretty good banking in it because both of them really just didn't really act like they were trying to whoop each other's ass. It's probably one of the more funnier fights that we've ever seen. But also, John West Townley was known to step out of a race truck or race car at Pocono because he was not comfortable with the race car. He's become kind of a laughing stock there because he was basically afraid of the equipment in the Pocono. So they had to find a replacement driver for him. But, you know, his father owned Zaxby's, and so he was basically kind of buying a ride in NASCAR. But unfortunate news. We don't really have much to add to that other than I just don't know if I buy that story. Greg Moore, are you still with us?
I'm still here. I was on mute.
I've been waiting for Greg to chime in.
Yeah.
I was on mute. I was listening. It is tragic. I heard it. I believe Claire B. Lang broke it on Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that came to my mind was that fight he had in the Truck Series that they ended up overdubbing with Jerry the King Lawler and Jim Ross.
And
I'm surprised. I mean, it's not funny, but I'm surprised that nobody has posted that yet.
Right.
At least I haven't seen it. Now that nobody's posted it and it's a couple days removed, now maybe I will post it. But
if the story is true, one of the first things that I see that kind of come out of this story, Craig, without cutting you off, is that that this could possibly be another situation where head concussions could have played a major part in this. We've talked about CTE here before. We've talked about the long-term effects that it has on the brain. We've seen this in football. Could this very well be a case of CTE where basically John Wesley had so many head concussions because of a massive amount of wrecks that he was in his short period in NASCAR? Could this, you know, without saying that it's an excuse, could this very well be a situation where we go back with the Aaron Hernandez and Junior Seau and Dick Trickle and other drivers that were affected with long-term mental pain and physical pain caused by concussions?
It very well could be. I just hope
hard to speculate something like this, but I mean, we have to keep an open mind here.
I just hope that they don't instantly go to that without doing some hardcore research before they make that assumption. It would be a shame if they went to that and then said, "Oh, hey, yeah, this will be easy to rule out."
Right. And I
think
that the family could offer the brain for evaluation, similar to the way that Junior Seau had requested. Hopefully, John Wesley's family is aware of this situation and could possibly have done the right thing and allowed his brain to be looked at to see if maybe that could be that he has substantial brain damage and created this uneasy. I mean, Craig, we both know that this is something similar that happened in wrestling, right? Everybody knows about the story with what's his name that killed his family, right? Chris Benoit, right? I mean, you know, that was, you know, was it drug abuse or was it CTE? You know, something made that guy snap and something made him do the most horrible, just unthinkable, unimaginable sin, and yet we're left to say why? Why did he do that? And I think that this is another one to question of, you know, what created this type of anger? What created this moment to just completely snap like that? And people who suffer traumatic brain injury, this is something that happens. This is something that has been very well documented that happens, these certain types of rages.
Yeah, it's definitely sad. We'll have to wait and see what transpires from it all and see what
we
they come up
with.
I hope they don't.
You know.
No, and I hope that they don't rush to judgment with it and say, "Oh, it was definitely CTE." Before they do their homework, sure, like you said, his family could very well donate his brain to the CTE Foundation, and I forget who it's run by. It's actually run by another professional wrestler. He's a Harvard graduate, I believe. I keep Chris something or other. Taz, maybe you can help me out with it. And he actually suffered from it, hence why it was founded. But definitely it has something. It's a tragedy nonetheless, no matter what it is. Tragedy nonetheless.
And hopefully somebody, you know, Dale Jr. is so proactive in situations that come to head injuries and stuff like that. And I just kind of, in the back of my mind, I have my fingers crossed that maybe somebody of his prominence made a phone call and was like, hey, let's investigate this even further. Because obviously you want to know what is in a man's head when he does something today. And, you know, it's a crime of passion, of course. That was his ex-wife. So there is motive there. But something had to have made this man snap. Or it could be that the person who shot both the female and the male, there could be more to the story on that side as well. It's never good to speculate on things, but it does leave us all in question of what the object of this discussion is, what could have been in John West Townley's brain to make him act out in such a way that has been described in the police report. Wow. Man, we have covered some ground already. It's 7:45. Craig wants to get out of here a little bit early tonight, and I think that we can arrange things to wrap up before too much longer. I did want to spend a few minutes on the subject of John West Townley. I also want to give a shout-out to Door Bumper Clear and the Dale Jr. Download and other places, SiriusXM Radio. They've really helped me expand my content throughout this year and kind of given us more content to discuss here on Race Chat Live. Jimmy Johnson was practicing at Texas and I believe at Indianapolis this week as he is preparing to race the Indianapolis 500 in the 2022 race season. I thought, guys, that Jimmy was going to go 1 year, and he may have made it through the year, but it was definitely just going to be one of those one-and-dones. He is obviously determined to make something happen in IndyCar. All I can do, guys, is send my best wishes to this guy, right? I mean, he's obviously has a fire lit under his ass and is wanting to prove to the world that his racing career is not over. Expectations going into the Indianapolis 500. Watched him run. I don't know if you guys have got any IndyCar races this year, but Jimmy Johnson has kind of been the Rick Ware race car type driver at in Indy. But showed promising advancements at the Oval before rain come down and cancel the session. What's you guys' expectations, Taz? We'll start with you.
You know, this is a touchy subject. I'm a Jimmy Johnson fan. He's done a lot in NASCAR, but IndyCar, it's kind of like, it's been heartbreaking. I mean, he's a good driver, but you can really see that he did not do so much preparation for IndyCar, I feel like. Or maybe the talent pool of drivers that he's with now, they just have that much more experience to where I don't think he'll be able to catch them up by the time he says he's done racing, period. So, I mean, my expectations, honestly, at very least, qualify. And if he qualifies, my highest expectation I could see, and I would consider this a championship victory if he can do this. And this is coming from a Jimmy Johnson fan right here.
I think if he qualifies, if he finishes the race at all, I think that would be considered, he should consider that a victory. I mean, he is in, besides the Daytona 500, he is in the second most prestigious race in automobile racing. If he finishes the race, if he qualifies, great. If he finishes it, he should probably look at that as a championship victory.
I don't
and
know.
And then hang his head up.
Man, I mean, you know, he threw away this year, right? I mean, he used this year to kind of get to know the car. I believe Jimmy Johnson honestly believes that this was the throwaway year, and next year he will be fully competitive. It has been reported by Adam Stern that he has turned down Cup Ride offers. So we are talking about a driver, a free agent driver that has 7 Cup championships, has turned down Cup offered rides because he is eyeing a full IndyCar schedule next season, including the Indy 500. I believe Jimmy Johnson still, somewhere in his unright mind, believes that he can be competitive in the IndyCar series. After we've seen him run all year long, 3 and 4 miles an hour slower than the rest of the competition. I don't believe any other driver would get that kind of hall pass. He is the Rick Ware Racing, in a very competitive race car, Chip Ganassi race car, of IndyCar. I mean, 3 to 4 miles an hour slower than the rest of the field. That is a big difference. But it has been reported by Adam Stern that Jimmy Johnson has turned down NASCAR offers as he is in pursuit of a full-time IndyCar schedule for next season, including his debut at the Indianapolis 500. Matt Diamondetto is still looking for a 2022 ride. It's a game of musical chairs, and the music is about a hot potato, hot potato, hot potato floor. We shook this apple tree before. Nothing's fell out of it. Do you guys see Matt Diamondetto closing in on any last-minute deals?
I think the only smart logistical idea he may have, and I think you guys may see it as it's a long shot, and you guys may think I'm crazy too.
2311.
But I think logistically this is probably going to make the most sense out of the case. Matt DiBenedetto should focus ongoing into
Xfinity
in 2022 with who?
Richard Childress.
Joe Gibbs Racing.
No, Joe Gibbs don't want him back. But I can see an open ride there.
No, I'm going to make my argument here. Joe Gibbs has 0 Xfinity drivers because we have no idea what's going on with Brandon Jones.
Right, right. I agree.
Harrison Burton's moving up to Cup.
Daniel Hemric headed to college.
He's over to college.
Right.
Ty Gibbs, we have no idea if he's going to go full-time, if he's even old enough yet to race at some of these tracks. So what does Joe Gibbs do?
Is he even old enough to drink a beer?
No.
So what does Joe Gibbs do? He's got to find drivers. And where does he got to go? I think John Hunter would be a great guy to lead the brigade, but if you need a second and third full time driver. Brandon Jones, like I said, up in the air. We don't even know if he's renewed his contract or how long his contract is for. And if you really want a talented driver and some of your equipment, give it back to Benedetto. And Matt DiBenedetto could help you in Cup Series if you do it right, because God only knows how much longer you'll have Truex, and it's only a matter of time before Denny Hamlin calls it a career as a race car driver.
He's not going to call it a career until he wins a championship.
And I think that's going to be this year, but that's well in advance of when we should be talking about this. Special update, next week is our roundtable discussion. We're looking really good. We'll get into that in just a minute as we get ready. One last thing on silly season that I've got here. Ricky Stenhouse returning to JTG Doherty Racing in 2022. They are going with one Cup team next year. No big surprise there, but Ricky Stenhouse gets to keep his ride at the 47 machine. So let's go into Toasted Tweets, one of my new favorite little toys that I'm playing around with. This is where we will say some of the funniest tweets or twisted tweets or toasted tweets, burner tweets that we hear throughout the week. I've got about five or six of them I will read on the air. These are hot topics, basically, that are going on in our sport that have had either funny comments or downright ridiculous comments, whatever makes the show. There's somewhere in it that will make you laugh. So as we get ready for the toasted tweet segment, I do need you guys to laugh after I get done reading these in conclusion of each one. So we will start with the number placement. Of course, they showed the 17 car, Chris Buescher's machine. The 17 did not look very good on the placement of that car. So it's Tom Sears at Lurkin Tom 14. He made a comment, just curious at NASCAR, look at this. Are you serious? Why are we even moving the numbers at all? The distance wheel to wheel from Gen 6 to the next gen car is almost extra 1 foot. If we stayed in the old cars, yeah, I get moving it, but now the thing's an entire billboard now with extra space.
I
told y'all, numbers moving forward, I don't care where the number moves. If you move it back, okay. If you move it forward, fine. If you're going to do something, if you're going to take away from traditional and move it to a different spot, and it requires a paint scheme such as NASCAR, you better do the freaking thing right. And Chris Buescher in the 17, although it's not unofficially the 2022 car yet, it is junk. Why? Because the main sponsor shows itself. But the associate sponsors are so tiny that there's so much space there, you're just like, it's an eyesore.
It is. Put the numbers back.
Halfway folded.
Put the freaking numbers back, NASCAR. Craig, anything before we go to the next type of tweet?
Put them back where they freaking belong. Stop fucking with shit.
I mean, it's bad enough you set it up for Bubba to win the race.
Oh, God.
But,
here we go. All right, the next toast to tweet. Sir Lion of Beef, at Sir Lion of, well, at Sir underscore Lion of. NASCAR to take away car numbers and finishing positions starting next year. Everyone will see an equal finish in money. NASCAR will be woke.
All right. 40 car IROC deals, fellas. Woohoo!
Everybody gets a trophy. That's everybody
hilarious.
Gets a win. All right.
Well,
so that's kind of
what
it
was said in the house this weekend.
You have the green flag participation trophy.
Everybody gets a trophy. No problem catching Kyle Busch's 200 wins now, because 40 drivers will win every week for the next 5 years.
All right.
So we'll go to our next posted tweet.
Breaking news in 2022. We have a first-time multi-champion. 40 drivers have won a championship.
Woo! 40 drivers go down to Phoenix or go over to Phoenix for the championship. All right, let's go to the next one. Rick Mass. Now, this one is funny, and I expect y'all to laugh. For all the folks fussing about Bubba Wallace rain short victory, I would have given my left butt for a rain short butt victory. Well, maybe only part of my left nut. Rick Mass, if you remember, he was in the Skoal number one car. He drove the 75 rimming car, sat on the pole for the inaugural Brickyard 400. Rick Mass said that he would give up half of his left nut, or was it his right nut? Well, he said only part
that
of
was
his
hilarious.
Left to win a cup race. I mean, I think we can all agree we would wreck our mother. We would give up something. We would give up a body part if we could call ourselves victorious in the National Series, NASCAR Cup Series. Division. I believe we could all agree on Rick Mass. Thank you for giving us a great laugh. Now this one, toast a tweet, comes by NASCAR Chasm. He is a very prominent a social media influencer within NASCAR. He says, tonight I shall DoorDash myself a tasty meal from McDonald's because, one, I want to celebrate Bubba Wallace's historic victory by supporting his sponsors, and two, I think it's the only app that works right now. Hashtag NASCAR, hashtag at Talladega. If anybody, if Mr. CJ Sports was listening, he would come unglued. What is so funny about this toasted tweet is the fact that there is no bigger app out there that crashes more than the DoorDash app. So very funny that the inside joke with NASCAR Cast is DoorDash, basically their app crashes every day. So for them, for NASCAR Chasm to come out and say that at least it would be the only app that works right now, just wait 5 minutes is all I can say. Wait 5 minutes, and it's about like our weather. Wait 5 minutes, and we'll have a different season. So shout-out to those sponsors, DoorDash, McDonald's. I hope he was wearing his Columbia Sportswear jacket when the Dasher delivered the food. So we'll go to our next one. I didn't hear too many laughs out of that one. Track president, which is honestly, it looks like Miss Meemaw Ivey, the governor of Alabama, says track president announces reconfiguration plans for Talladega to become a road course to prevent another Bubba Wallace win after today's travesty.
So they're following the footsteps of Daytona.
Yeah, I mean, we've already got one of those. You know, Tony Stewart had a great idea. They'll split the track in half and do a configure eight and go backwards until every car is in a wreck. I believe the last twisted tweet of the night, the 66 radio, Davison, it was James Davison, I believe is his name. He's a sports car driver out of Australia. 66 Radio says, you drink, yeah, for Rick Ware Racing, another driver. He said, you drink that much water in one stint, you're going to pee in my seat. I was just wondering who's running our cleaning detail here. That comes from, I believe, the crew chief after Davison had asked for another bottle of water at his pit stop. So obviously it is no secret that drivers pee in their fire suits when they have to go. So hopefully no number twos, but definitely, obviously, is without a doubt that some go the number ones. So we are now into the fan question segment as we are rolling over the top of the hour. We should be out of here in about 10 minutes, guys. We're rolling smooth sailing straight out of here. Get Craig in bed at the time that he has requested here tonight. Happy Saturday, Chris. Hope it was a good one. So I think I have pretty good understanding of race cars now from the questions you guys have answered. Now I have to ask about the tracks. I've heard things about super speedways, short tracks, dirt, road courses. They even put in right turns. I thought all the tracks were oval and just one left turn after another. They'll have a lot to learn. Thanks again for your time, Miss Rebecca. Well, Miss Rebecca, we have used the term cookie cutter a lot on this show, and the cookie cutter track is basically the mile and a half track that seems to be the prominent rebuild speedway that they built between the 90s and the early 2000s. Kentucky Speedway, Chicagoland, Homestead, Kansas Speedway, Charlotte. Of course, Charlotte was already on the schedule. Homestead, these tracks, they all had a similar configuration. Texas Motor Speedway, the racetrack out in California, Fontana. All these tracks were built kind of in the similar time, and they kind of replicated it over and over again. I still believe Chicagoland and Homestead were nothing like the normal cookie-cutter tracks that they've seen. As a matter of fact, Homestead to this day has excellent racing, topside racing, and Chicagoland was one of my favorite tracks as well. We always seen good racing there. Unfortunately, you know, Kansas, Kentucky, there was never really good racing there. But those are the cookie-cutter tracks. Now, we also have short tracks.
Those are consistent of Martinsville, Richmond, Bristol. Help me, guys. Is there one I'm missing there? Supposedly, the Fontana racetrack out in California is going to be remade into a smaller mile speedway, 1 mile speedways.
It's supposed to be, no, I think it's supposed to be just under a mile because it's supposed to be short track. And if I remember right, this Fontana's new configured track after 2022 is supposed to have straightaways like Martinsville, but the corners are banked like Bristol.
Right. And short tracks can really be, I don't know what you would consider. Do you consider St. Louis? Yeah, O'Reilly Raceway Park or whatever it's called now.
No, Gateway, I believe, is an intermediate track because in order for short tracks to be considered short track, it has to be less than a mile in length in one lap.
Okay. So that would exclude Phoenix, and that would exclude Gateway, which is Worldwide Technology Speedway. That's the name of it at this point in time. Those tracks are considered intermediate tracks, not necessarily a cookie-cutter track that we would see from basically a Charlotte and a Texas and a Kansas, those types of speedways.
If your ARCA, the two-mile-long track, dirt tracks, Springfield and I want to say DuQuoin is the two dirt tracks they go to. They consider those short tracks, and with ARCA, they have what's called a short track challenge series where essentially it's a little mini series within ARCA that they used to do.
It's basically the East and West series, right?
Essentially, they take all the short tracks on their schedule, do a little mini series with that, so that part-time drivers who only plan on racing short tracks could win an ARCA championship. Weird thing, but it is what it is.
There's also a confusion because Talladega Super Speedway, Daytona International Speedway, those are both considered Super Speedway racetracks. Nashville has the Nashville Short Track, which is at the fairgrounds, and then Nashville has a Super Speedway racetrack. Unfortunately, I believe Nashville Super Speedway was inappropriately named a Super Speedway. It's called a Super Speedway because it's a mile-and-a-half racetrack. It's not the typical cookie-cutter racetrack configuration, though I believe it's a lot like Iowa, so I guess you would kind of fit it into the intermediate-type racetrack. Even though it's called a Super Speedway, it is technically not a Super Speedway.
It's a mile-and-a-half track. It's
concrete.
It's similar to Dover.
Right. It's a concrete. And Dover is just on the outside of not being a short track along with New Hampshire. Is there a certain name? Is that considered short tracks, New Hampshire and Dover?
New Hampshire and Dover are technically not, even though people kind of put them on the same topic, I guess.
Right. Okay, so, and then what we have left.
I believe New Hampshire's a little over a mile in length. And Dover, I think, is a mile.
Right, yeah, the monster mile. So those are right at 1 mile racetracks. Definitely different racetracks. If you know the SRX series and you got to see Slinger, that is a short track. Mobile Raceway, that's a short track. Five Flags, where the Snowball Derby is, that is a short track, less than a mile short track that has, you know, humongous following there in December when it's a Snowball Derby for that racetrack. Of course, there's road courses. We are introducing Portland to our race schedule in the NASCAR band of series. They will be racing the Xfinity Series at Portland. We raced at places like Miami. Of course, we got COTA, which is there in Austin, Texas. We have
the Roval. We have the Daytona road course. We have the Indianapolis road course. We have Watkins Glen, which is a true road course. We have Sears Point, which I believe is known as, what is that known as now? Sears Point, what is
Sonoma.
It known as? Sonoma Raceway. That is a road course racetrack. Think that we have raced Mid-Ohio. We've raced at Road America. I believe I'm leaving one there off from some. But those are our road courses. So there are a few racetracks where we make right-hand turns, not just left-hand turns. At the extensive length of covering the racetracks, I know we've left a couple of them out there. And in the description of the racetracks are also, that's just scraping the surface. We mentioned that there's some places that are concrete. Nashville, Dover, I believe. There's concrete at Bristol as well. Then you have your asphalt tracks like Gateway and New Hampshire. Okay, so those types of racetracks as well. You got your dirt track, which Eldora, Knoxville, I believe you said a couple of them there from Arca. Different banking. We won't even get into that. We won't even get into the each track has its own banking, and some of it's called progressive banking, and some of it's just typically, a banking through the corners. Martinsville is one of the only flat tracks that we have. It will be considered the Los Angeles Coliseum. Okay, I don't know what that means. We will be at the LA Coliseum. It's going to be a quarter-mile racetrack on a flat surface. So we're looking forward to seeing that. It's going to be something similar to Bowman Gray Stadium. It will be definitely something to take a look into. Look, thank you, Mr. Trica, for the fan question. We look forward to next week as well. Any other fans that have a question, we'd be glad to answer that as well. Let's move right along. They are predicting weather this weekend. Craig Moore, I believe that is something that you want to talk about real quick.
Oh, I did not realize that you dropped out. Go ahead, Greg.
Somebody had muted me. That's all right. By looking at the weather, it looks like Saturday is a good chance of rain. As a matter of fact, today, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday down at Charlotte, it is raining. It's going to rain. So Saturday's Xfinity race could get moved to Sunday morning or Monday if need be.
Well, why?
Because
I thought they had rain tires.
Well, you never know. They may change the rules again for them this weekend.
We've seen a disaster race last year in the rain at the Roval. Wondering if we won't see that escapade once again this year. Craig Moore, I'm keeping my fingers crossed because that was one of the most memorable races I can remember in recent years.
Well, we just had the discussion in our house earlier while we were having dinner from Domino's, that rain tires didn't exist, neither did windshield wipers. So we had to do a quick Google search. And he has not told me that I am right. But by her yelling, shut up, from the living room, I do know now that she knows I am right. But,
you didn't specify road
courses. Oh, I didn't specify road courses. I'm sorry. I didn't know you had to be explicit. I would like to tell you that the move south will take place in November. It was supposed to be the 8th or the 9th. It has since moved a week because yours truly took another event for November. I just got told no more bookings for November so we can get the hell out of here and move south, seeing as my father keeps posting
pictures of the pool and his thermometer outside on his deck.
Yeah, if he lived out.
Today in South Florida, it was 95 degrees.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So, Ted, you and the family will have to come visit. And we plan on going to Daytona in the in February. So we will keep you updated on that, and we'll have some pictures and videos and whatnot when that comes to fruition. But yeah, let's get to the pick. And I don't know where I sit in the Xfinity picks, but I know it's not to the top of the page.
Oh, boy. Let's see. Xfinity.
I mean, if you're talking road course and Xfinity, you got to know who I'm going to pick.
Well, Xfinity, right now, in Xfinity Series alone for Race Chat Live, I currently sit on top. Chris is back behind 67 points. Jason is third, 105 points back. Craig is on the cusp of being eliminated with 124 points back.
What's this elimination bullshit?
Unfortunately for our production manager, Mrs. Lee Reed, she's actually not in contention for Xfinity Championship for Race Chat Live.
Yeah, but, you know, in this world of racing, everybody gets a trophy. I mean, look at Bubba Wallace. She's going to have to get something.
Yeah, I think going in, we should, like, completely reset the points and have a runoff. That way it only matters on the last race of the year.
That's right.
Everybody.
And that way it gives Miss Lee a chance.
We all agreed on points throughout the season without reset, though.
No. We're just kidding. We want to see who the baddest one is of the show. And as of right now, Taz Taylor, it seems to be that you're in cruise control. So I've only got a few races. One thing I did notice is I'm in second in every category. So I feel kind of like Mark Martin here, always somebody's prize mate. Whereas always somebody's bitch.
You could be a Denny Hamlin as well, because, you know, you might have to pay to get a laid. I mean, to get up in point.
Two-finger Denny. Too much. Hey, he didn't want it to be cheating, you know. Two fingers and a little, well, never mind, a little rub down there. don't have us talking like that on the radio. So really, seriously, it's either going to be AJ Allmendinger in the Xfinity Series or Ty Gibbs. It's a toss-up. Who's going to take AJ and who's going to take Ty?
I'm going to take Ty just because I know you're going to take Dillinger. Or Dinger.
But we're leaving out Austin Cindric.
That's all right.
And Josh Berry.
I'm not sure how Josh is going to do. If he was a dirt late model driver, I would have expectations for Berry. But being that he is an asphalt late, a late model asphalt driver, it's a little bit different. Like, you don't get as much of the drift of the corners when you're in an asphalt car. They've had track control for a very long time up in their series. So, I'm just not sure if he's got that type of development, being that most of his experience comes on asphalt. But Austin Cindric, AJ Allmendinger, and Ty Gibbs, I mean, it's, you know, I wouldn't have put Ty Gibbs in that at the beginning of the year, but being that the way he come out and stomped ass and Papaw's number 54 machine, it's hard to say that he doesn't have a chance. Ty Dillon will be in the 23 machine, and let's see some other notables. Of course, Brett Moffitt. You said Josh Berry's in the one car. Noah Gragson, of course, in the 9.
Daniel Hemric, Brandon Jones, Harrison Burton, all those guys there as well. Not seeing any road ringers coming out of the closet or retirement, like possibly a Boris Head or anything like that. So just your typical full season Xfinity drivers. I'm going to go with the Dinger. Of course, I'm going to go with the Dinger. He's had an awesome year. I can't see myself going for anybody else. I guess that'll leave you, Taz. Who are you going to take?
Well, my picks are already in, so I guess so. People are probably going to say, "Oh, Chris took Taz's pick." Well, he took my pick. I have Mr. Dingaling Ice Cream Man AJ Allmendinger.
He's a dingling, the dingling. He's a ringling, lingling. AJ Allmendinger.
Yep.
He likes.
Well, I tell you, Mr. CJ Sports is not a fan of AJ Allmendinger, that's for sure. There is no love at all for the Dinger when it comes to the fearless leader himself, Mr. CJ Sports. So let's go to the Cup side. We'll get Miss Lee's picks and Mr. CJ Sports has picked them later. I figure most of you guys are going to think that I'm going to jump straight on the bandwagon and go for two for two. I would like to be the last one to make my pick here because I'm probably going to regret it. So we'll start with you, Taz. You said your pick is in. Pick is anywhere near your pick. Who do you have to win the Cup race, the Roval race at Charlotte?
Well, there's a couple of strong drivers that I was looking into. Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott, Martin Truex, Kyle Larson. Those are some good notables. I mean, there's also Christopher Bell who won the Daytona Roval out of nowhere that we didn't expect. I don't see Kyle Busch doing well at this kind of track. He hasn't shown that at the Roval, being his average finish there is a 33.0. So I would expect him to struggle. Denny Hamlin wouldn't be a bad one to go with, to be honest with you. Ryan Blaney is a great one to go with since his average finish is inside the top five. But I'm going on the Hendrick Chevrolet camp. And my pick is going to be
Chase Elliott.
Joke's on you, Kyle Larson.
Woohoo, Kyle Larson.
Yeah.
He picked the wrong Hendrick driver, though.
I agree.
Because they're not going to let him win a championship.
Hold on. You say I go with the wrong Hendrick driver. I could have, but Kyle Larson has shown how good he is on road courses when we all thought he wouldn't.
Oh, I mean, I know. I mean, he can be fast there. There's several drivers on this list. I think we missed Kurt Busch, Brad Keselowski. Those guys know how to win it, right?
And I do remember Kyle Larson limping a very wrecked Chip Ganassi car to, I think, a near top 20 finish. And one year he was pretty close to being eliminated from the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that mine is going to really catch you guys off guard because I made a prediction in our roundtable, and the question is, will I stick to that prediction as we go to Craig Moore? Taz Taylor's got Kyle Larson. He's been the favorite all season long, but we've seen Kyle Larson kind of take a fall. I do want to hit the points real quick before we leave here tonight as we're going into the last race before elimination. But one more time as we go around the table, Craig Moore, who do you have
for the win this weekend at the Roval. Ryan Blaney.
I'm going to go way outside the box. I'm going to go way outside the box here. I'm going to go with somebody who needs a win. I don't give a shit what stats tell you. I'm going to go with a definite long shot here, and that's Alex Bowman.
What?
Wow.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, I think he's got a lot to prove. That's definitely a long shot, and I'm going to tell you what.
Jeez,
if
Craig,
he
I know
does
you're
it,
tired. I didn't think you were that tired.
Well, you know, listen, you're betting against Alex Bowman, and you're an Alex Bowman fan. So you're going
I
with Kyle Larson.
I never said I was an Alex Bowman fan, though.
Well, I just...
I only try to support him because he's got Johnson's old number, and I try supporting Larson because he's got Johnson's old team. I don't really have a favorite driver in Cup necessarily.
So he's left without his driver. You know, his driver retired at the end of last year. So I did not realize that about Taz. He just made me really sad when he told me that he does not have a favorite driver right now in the Cup Series. This guy's got to find a favorite driver. Obviously, nobody wants to be a Chase Elliott fan, so I don't blame him on that.
Listen, you've got a favorite driver. It's called the pace car.
Yeah, we're running out of time. Let's go ahead and get this thing closed out. So make sure somebody's got that point thing up as I make my pick. AJ Allmendinger, you would think straight from the door that would be the 17th different winner this year. That would be amazing to see. I'm just not sure if AJ can capitalize, go 2 for 2 this weekend. It would be great to see that. Another guy that kind of stands out, Brad Keselowski, was somebody who we thought would be kind of the cellar dweller going into this. He's actually in the top 4, I believe, in the point standings. It would be really cool to see Brett Keselowski pick up that win and solidify himself into the final, into the round of 8 for sure, to solidify that. That would kind of set him up for that championship run. Blaney, a former winner of the race, I think he's the one to reckon with. I said in our prediction roundtable that Christopher Bell, I didn't want to vote him out of the circle, out of the round of 8, because I felt like Christopher Bell would be a prominent factor in the race at the Roval. Time has gone on a little bit. I'm not so confident about that pick anymore, so I will be reneging that prediction. So that's going to leave me with Martin Truex Jr., guys. Martin Truex Jr. is going to put himself straight where he needs to be for the final, for the two rounds. Martin Truex Jr., one of these, it should be one of the favorites, and I believe Vegas will be looking at him as one of the favorites. As I believe Craig just dropped out on us there. but I've got Martin Truex Jr. for the win. Taz Taylor, make sure you mark that down.
All right. So Craig has Ty Gibbs and Alex Bowman. Wow, Alex Bowman, I can't believe that. God.
I know, that doesn't even sound right.
Chris has AJ Allmendinger and T-Rex Martin Truex Jr. I have AJ Allmendinger and Kyle Larson.
Now, will you hit that rundown real quick on the final points there? I mean, on the points before we close this thing out there.
All right. Our current Cup Series playoff standings right now, heading into the Roval. Denny Hamlin is the only driver guaranteed into the next round. So this race don't mean much of anything to him other than trying to gain playoff points. Kyle Larson sits second. He's 22 above the cut line. Joey Logano, 21 ahead. Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex Jr. tie for fourth and fifth, 20 above 20 points. Ryan Blaney, currently in sixth, 15 points above the cut line. Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch both sit
at 7th and 8th place, respectively. Both are 9 points ahead of the cut line. Kevin Harvick is the first driver underneath, 9 points below. Christopher Bell in 10th, 28 points below the cut line. William Byron in 11th, and essentially a must-win situation, 44 points below. And Alex Bowman, as Craig said earlier, essentially a must-win. He is 52 points below the cut line. Moving over to Xfinity real quick, Austin Cindric is 77 points ahead of the cut line. He is good. Justin Allgaier, 55 points ahead of the cut line. He is essentially good. Daniel Hemric is 41 points ahead of the cut line. He is essentially good. A.J. Allmendinger sitting in 4th, 33 points ahead of the cut line. Justin Haley in 5th, 24 points ahead. Brandon Jones, plus 21 in 6th. Noah Gregson in 7th, plus 18. Harrison Burton is the final driver above the cut line, 8 points ahead of the good. Jeff Burton in 9th, 8 points out. Myatt Snyder, 10th place, 24 points out. Riley Herbst, pretty close to a must-win situation, sits 11, 32 points out. And Jeremy Clements, essentially must-win situation, he sits in the 12th spot, 48 points out of the final playoff spot.
And do you have right on hand there the four guys that we eliminated in our prediction? Because I think we're really, really close on that.
We have still loading that up.
Okay, so I want to give Miss Lee's picks real quick while you're figuring that one. While you're getting that pulled up.
I actually have our four drivers out right here. So the four drivers we have eliminated after the round of 12, and this is all together as a team. We have eliminated as a team Kevin Harvick, Christopher Bell, Alex Bowman, and Kyle Busch.
Wow. And so the four drivers that are in elimination factor right now, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick.
Kyle Busch is in the good right now. Alex Bowman is essentially in a must-win situation below the cut line. Christopher Bell has about 20 points to work with, I believe, underneath the cut line. Yeah, he has 28 points to work with. He's not fully eliminated yet. Kevin Harvick is sitting 9 points below the cut line, so we're all right there. So essentially it's going to come down to a brawl between Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick, where Christopher Bell, he really needs to reel in those points, but he's not fully out of it yet. Bowman essentially must win.
If Christopher Bell were to pick up a win, that would completely blow us out of the water. But we may nail 3 out of 4 again this go around. It's very interesting, Miss Lee, she picked Dinger. Which, thank goodness, not four of us picked Dinger, because then it would completely eliminate Dinger from being able to be picked. So three have Dinger to win, and Christopher Bell on the Cup side. It would have been really cool if I'd have stuck with my pick. She said she don't ask why, but just a gut feeling on Christopher Bell. It is kind of funny that you said that, Miss Lee, because I did vote to not eliminate him for this round based off of a win that he would receive at the Roval that I have potentially reneged on. So if that comes into fruition, I will look like not just a single idiot, but a double idiot. All right, race fans, we went just a few minutes over, but we want to thank you guys for listening. We were trying to get out of here at 8:30. Of course, we've already set Mr. Craig Moore to bed. We have wrapped him up and given him a good night kiss and told him a bedtime story. So we'll see him next week as we go back to our normal time slot on Monday nights. I did like the fact that we had a lot more content to work with here tonight as we get ready for next year. We may have to move but this was all done on Monday night because Mr. Craig Moore was working at Pizza Hut, I believe, at the time, the general manager, and he was only going to have Mondays off. Monday nights were his only night of availability. So we'll try to get that figured out as the 2022 race season closes upon us. And we start wrapping our shows up here in just a few weeks.
Want to thank y'all for listening. Make sure you share the show. We are in full-blown competition with Southern Dirt Track Report for the most listens in a short, I think a 10-week period. It is very close. We're within, I believe, 2 points of each other. So a very close race as we head down the final stretch as we get try to win that 110 nation money. Taz Taylor, let's go ahead and close it out, my friend.
All right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening along to Race Chat Live here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you to our partners of 110 Nation Sports, TNT Designs, and More to Music. We want to say thank you for listening to our odd night of show here on a Wednesday night. We'll be back to our Mondays. This coming Monday, Roundtable Discussion will be live on Blog Talk Radio and our Race Chat Live Facebook page for that, for the round of eight, and pick four drivers to move on to the final four at that point. So, without further ado, this has been the Caution Flag of Radio, Chris Creighton, the DJ Music Man, Craig Moore. I am the Tasmanian Double Flaggers, Taz Taylor, saying good night. We'll see you at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Central this coming Monday in Roundtable Discussion on Facebook Live. And once again, we'll be here on Blog Talk Radio as well. Have a good night.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curve, planting the hill. Someday the mountain might get 'em, but the law never will. Making their way. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Just a good old boy, wouldn't change if they could. Fighting the system like a two modern day Robin Hood.
See y'all on Monday.